Look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour of this Tuesday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. If you joined us late, definitely catch the archive. Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show was our first two-hour guest. We talked about a lot of things from the primaries, Republican GOP primaries, to psychological warfare, to the situation in the Middle East, to the domestic threats we face here at home.
Yeah.
From the economy to potential EMPs. And, you know, as Stan said during the break, I'm going to bring more good news to the party.
Yes. Let's hit everybody while they're down, hey.
There you go. Yeah. And if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesday with Stan. StanDeo.com is his website. And more relevant than ever, Dare to Prepare by Holly Dale. Man. Do we need to know how to prepare? And Holly's got the book for that. That's Dare to Prepare. And, of course, StanDale.com. Check out his website and also his show mentions page. Stan, where do you want to start? I mean, yeah, let's spread some...
more joy.
More joy, right.
Yeah, you know, let's look home here at America at the moment. Linda Babb, one of our friends and a listener to your show, early in the week sent me, over the weekend, some links about a new Turkish mosque being built or being opened in Maryland this week. And if you go to the show images page, top row right-hand picture says, see new $100 million Turkish mosque in Maryland. You click on that, you see a number of pictures and a couple of links to articles about this. But what is really interesting is this mosque is over the top. I mean, it's got two of the minarets, you know, standing up where the mullahs, you know, or the speaker says, you know, come to prayer six times a day. And it's got underground parking. If you look at it, this thing parked right in the middle of a neighborhood has underground parking so that they don't clutter up the streets, which is thoughtful. But I also thought it's probably because they don't want to have anybody throwing stuff at them or harming their cars, etc., while they were parked on the street doing this mosque. Because, you know, who wants to have, you know, the Sharia law brought into our community and then eventually taking it over, which I'll discuss in a minute, which is already happening in another town in Michigan. But anyway, here in Maryland, you can see some of the inside of this mosque on these pictures I've got. And then you'll read that this is a Turkish mosque, the first one, a Turkish mosque being built here in the States. And it's going to be like christened or opened officially by Tayyip Erdogan from, you know, the president, prime minister, whatever he's going to be called this week, of Turkey. Now, he was trying to get, officially, to get Obama to open this big mosque with him. I'll tell you what. That would have been a bad political move, and you know, Obama stepped out of this one for some reason. He saw the wisdom of not doing that right now. But when you hear the rest of what I'm going to talk about, the other Muslim towns here that are putting in mosques, you'll see the threat that we have here. This is not just a neighborhood church, they peacefully worship there and whatever. 1% of the Muslims in this country, at least, are terrorist prone. They're radical, and I'm sure there'll be some go to this mosque. If you've ever, I'm sure you've done this, but if you ever looked at the Quran, you see that they mean to take over the world. They mean to make Christians and people of the Book, in other words, Jews and Christians, join Islam and to follow Sharia law. If we don't, they're going to either kill us or make us pay a tax, and a heavy tax, and be treated as a second-rate citizen in the community where they control it. Now, very cleverly, what is happening is we're in the middle of a revived crusades battle between the Western Christian nations and the Eastern Arabic Muslim nations. And what they're doing now, instead of coming in with troops on horses and sabers and stuff and cutting at us, they are settling their people in the United States and in Europe rather peacefully, it would appear, and letting their communities grow and letting them have their mosques, and gradually, through a democratic process, city by city, is going to fall to Sharia law, which really is overthrowing our U.S. Constitution. But because of religious freedom, they say that they're going to be able to do this and get away with it. This is a real worry to me. It's a very subtle invasion, and I don't think that the Muslim families stop at two babies. I think they go more than that, like the Catholics used to do, have, six, seven, eight, 10 children to rapidly, over a generation or two, repopulate the area where they are with children that are Islamic and follow the Sharia law. Now, go back over into the show images page, and there's a town called Hamtramck, and it's in kind of in the middle of Detroit. Detroit surrounds it, and it's a small little town of 20,000 people. You can read about the Islamic takeover of Hamtramck in that first box there down in the text. It says read about it, and you go and read the details of what I'm telling you about here. But you'll see signs down underneath that on the second row, first and second boxes. One sign has a bunch of Muslims in Hamtramck, and it says, "The followers of Muhammad will conquer America." Now, that's here in America, in a town that's, a little tiny town at the moment. The next picture over shows, "Sharia will dominate the world." Again, people standing on the streets in Hamtramck, Michigan. Now, this is not good. We're creating... By the Constitution, we're creating this enemy of the state within the state. And I think that Donald Trump's idea about, halting immigration and doing something about this is not a silly idea. We have to stand up and put them back in their place and stop this stuff. We're allowing legally people who want to overthrow our government to come in and plant mosques in communities and start declaring a Sharia law. Now, in this little town here, for the first time, they've now got a majority rule of the town council that's a Muslim council now. I think they've got 4 out of 6 positions that are Muslims. And, if Islam was not dedicated to the overthrow of Christians and our way of life, it'd be a different story for me. I know there are a lot of very, normal, Muslims here in the country. Very normal people, you can be friends with and all that kind of stuff. But there's that element that goes to the letter of the law within the Quran, which they use to justify, terrorist attacks on our country and other countries in the Western nations. This town used to be, I think it was something like 40% Polish Catholic. And when the article said 40, Holly said 90, but... anyway, at some point in time, they've now reduced it down to about 15% of the people that were originally there, that were Polish. They're aging because they, their children and stuff are moving out because nobody wants to stay there. I mean, there are business owners who are within 500 feet liquor license because the new council says, no, you're too close to a mosque, so you can't have a liquor license. You'll have to sell or move or do something. So it's already starting to take over. And I just Dearborn's the same way. If you look at the show images page there, there's a second row on the right-hand side there. There's the Islamic Center of America in Dearborn, Michigan. You click on that and see that big picture of that. These guys are serious business. They're spending lots of dollars to build these big Islamic centers, and these are plants. These are areas where terrorists can breed, and I hate to say it, but that's what we're faced with. Islam is more like a business or an organization than it is a religion. I know that it poses, as a religion worshiping Allah, but their tactics and stuff are more like a military operation these days. It worries me.
We investigated a number of Islamic centers, especially in Buffalo, New York, in Binghamton, from Binghamton to Olean, upstate New York to Buffalo, New York,
to the group the Lackawanna Six.
Yes. What we're seeing here, and America has this prideful naivete about this assimilation. Oh, let's embrace them. These people have no intention of assimilating. And you said it so right on the money. When you're looking at these Islamic centers being built, follow the money, and you're going to see outside foreign sourced. All of this is sourced built with outside money or money that's coming in from outside the country. They're establishing bulkheads, beachheads here in this country, and people might say, well, that's just crazy talk. You're just that's a bigoted or whatever you want to call it. But no, it's not. And you look at that. I mean, folks, look at Stan Deo's show images page.
We had Dr. Bill Warner on. He is his website, politicalislam.com. He talks about the fact that that we are not opposing the infiltration of Islam is basically equal to accepting Sharia law.
Sure.
He talks about the teachings in the Quran that allow the believers of the Quran to lie, cheat, steal, misrepresent themselves in order to carry out their mission.
And I just want to say this, Stan. During an official meeting on Islamic Christian dialogue, an authoritative Muslim person speaking to the Christians participating stated very calmly and assuredly, and folks, you've heard this before, thanks to your democratic laws, we will invade you, and thanks to our religious laws, we will dominate you. And that's exactly what Stan Deo is pointing out right here.
Yeah, it's frightening. It really is. And the ignorance of people trying to adhere to this political correctness stuff, it just astounds me. They can't see what's going to take them down, losing homes, lives, family, and stuff to this attack. And it's not with guns and stuff at the moment. It's going to be subtle, city by city, state by state. And at some point, it's going to erupt. And if it is stopped or if it's interrupted by, let's say, extreme right-wing groups that suddenly get really mad about it and start shooting or harming the Muslim communities, then the Muslim communities will fight back and will feel justified in defending themselves and attacking, and the spread of Islam in this country will go absolutely bananas, and requiring martial law, because there will be a number of people who will rise up with arms, because we're all basically entitled to that, and try to stop this invasion. This invasion will be like a civil war. I've talked about this many, many years, and the hope you've told us it's going to happen. And here we are. We're right at the doorway to this, and people just cannot see this. The New England, the eastern states, the Washington cadre and whatever, they're all ho-ho, peace, love, harmony, left-wing, let's all go down the drain together. I just cannot believe this country is following that. Anyway, let's hope that Trump gets in. I saw a picture of him on the internet today with a M16 he's in, and he says, we're from America, we're coming for you.
Are you as cynical as Dave Hodges was, and I don't mean to even sound disparaging at all about what his feeling, but the election's coming up. You think that there's going to be some chicanery with respect to the Trump's nomination? Do you think that they're going to pull out the stops and maybe, you know, throw a monkey wrench into the mix?
Oh, something's going to happen, I'm sure. You know, Holly and I both worry for his safety, because he is definitely so much against the establishment, as it were, the established Republican Party, which is dominated by large money interests that are not Donald Trump. And, you know, I don't know whether they'll spring some, you know, bad press on him about something. I don't know what it would be, but, you know, it's either going to be that or they will scare people into not voting for him because of some thing he said. They'll blow out of proportion or something. But let's hope he doesn't get hurt, you know, between now and physically.
They've spent over $500 million in negative ad campaigns on Trump in the primary season so far, and his base has only grown. So I think they're going to have to change tactics.
Yeah, and I'm worried about what that's going to entail. You know, I do worry for the man. He speaks what we think, and I would hope that when he gets into office, he'd be able to accomplish at least half, maybe three-quarters of what he wants to do. But remember, just being in the office doesn't clear the pathway of everything you want to do. You've still got to deal with the House and the Senate and Supreme Court in some cases, I'm sure.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, you're looking at this. I look at, and I said this last week, perhaps I even said it to you, I'm not sure, but I look at this election cycle and this political landscape we're in, this geopolitical landscape we're in. In one way, I look at it, and it looks like 1968. And I look at it from another angle, it looks like 1930s Nazi Germany, pre-war Germany, that is.
Yeah.
You know, I just, I can't, it's such a, I don't know, a nebulous thing. I can't put my finger on what we're looking at here, except it's not normal. That much I know.
Yeah. You know, we're approaching the point where they're going to force, you know, civil disobedience across the country, civil war. It's just coming to a head, and you know, you talk about cynicism about this election. As we've said, you and I, many times, are we going to get to have an election?
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing to throw into the mix of all this worry.
Yeah. That's a whole nother angle, I suppose. But I'm very concerned about civil war in this country because people are angry. People are extremely angry.
I know they are. I've just got to reset my computer here. It's got a virus or something. Just screen's gone all crummy on me.
Well, that's what you get for tuning in to the Hagman and Hagman Reporter, connecting up with us. Well, in the meantime, you know, you've got, again, your show images. Sharia will dominate the world in Hamtramck, Michigan, the Islamic Center, Dearborn, the Islamic Center.
We were talking
Center,
off here, remember, about NATO and
yes,
Turkey's position
yes.
in NATO.
Yes.
You know, NATO is really kind of causing grief to NATO militarily, and NATO depends on Turkey for some of its actions in the Middle East. And, you know, there's a big question being asked now whether Turkey should be asked to leave NATO, but there's been no provision made in the NATO agreement for dismissing, you know, a member.
Right.
Well, not that I know of, anyway. And so we're looking at a situation where Turkey is fomenting trouble on their border there with that strip of land where ISIS controls it and ships arms back and forth to Iran and various other places. You know, Turkey is just playing with the enemy, and Erdogan is now threatening the Jewish kindergarten schools in the southern part of Turkey, threatening to arrest and you know, perhaps kill them. The U.S. has been taking military personnel out of southern Turkey now this week, telling them to get out, we'll bring you home, because of the increased aggravation against Americans, Christians, and, of course, Jews. I was watching the news here just before we went on air over in Israel, Channel 7 there in Tel Aviv, And they were talking there about come home, get out of Turkey, Jewish people, because Erdogan's guys are going to come down and start killing us. Now, this is Turkey run by Erdogan, who considers himself to be a modern King Solomon, you know, all wise, all knowing, etc. And he's also in a country that wants to, according to their news, TV news about 2 or 3 years ago, wants to build the temple of King Solomon in Jerusalem. So it's a love-hate relationship he has with Israel at the moment. If they're talking in the back rooms about building the Temple of Solomon to allow Jews to worship in that temple, because it's from King Solomon, and they revere King Solomon, you know, and Suleiman the Magnificent, all that stuff is, you know, the bee's knees there in Turkey. This is why they would allow that and allegedly make a peace in the Middle East because of that. So Erdogan is still high on my Antichrist list. If you see that on the show images page there. I don't know, you know, if he's going to turn out to be the guy or not. There are a few other candidates there, as you can see on the page. But, you know, who knows?
Wow. Yeah. Well, the entire situation in the Middle East, the destabilization, the Turkish complicity, at least in my view, along with the U.S. attempting to destabilize Bashar al-Assad, as well as prop ISIS just to some extent, all of this together, all of this combined, it just seems like we're seeing this clash come quickly, or, you know, accelerate, and now everything's coming to a head all at one time.
How would you like to be trying to make, well, we're doing it here, I guess, but to make a rational assessment of who's with who, who's up who over in the Middle East? Is, you know, is Turkey with Iran? Is Iran with ISIS? Is ISIS with, you know, Saudi Arabia? You know, all these people are in different categories, different little groups. And, you know, who knows who to trust over there?
Well, it's the old saying, prophetic... the fulfillment of biblical prophecy certainly makes strange for strange political bedfellows, right?
Well, as you know, that Saudi Arabia has made a deal with Oman to start manufacturing munitions, you know, bombs, 2,000-pound bombs, and tank shells and mortar shells and stuff. They've set up a factory to start doing that. So you can tell that both of them are talking about the approach of an imminent ground war. This week, the Saudi cabinet met, you know, King Salman, not the princess, and the king, met with the 39 nations that Prince Salman put together in that joint operation to test how they could fight, you know, a war over there against ISIS or Iraq, Iran, whoever. They might end up going against Iran, probably, but in that meeting, the king put forth the suggestion they want the United Nations Security Council to develop a special international protection system for Palestine. In other words, so that if the Jews step out of line, that the UN Security Council can swat them, you know, and the Saudis are putting that forward. You know, some of these things just seem kind of non sequitur, you know. Oxymorons.
Yes, Joe used the word or term bipolar earlier in the show. It seems like we have a lot of bipolarity going on over the place. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, that could switch at the drop of a hat. These alliances, when you get 39 nations together, and there are mixed brands of Islam in these various nations, you know, one might get mad against the other while they're in the field, or, you know, stop supporting a flank, or, you know, how do you control an army of so many diverse cultures in a confrontation? I just don't understand what they're doing here.
You know, anyway. that's a good point. And as I remember listening to you again back in the 90s, Art Bell, and would you have envisioned this back in the 90s, where we're at right now?
Someday I would have, but not as quickly, I guess. It seems quick to those of us that are older and time passes quicker, but for a young person, if you wait from, say, 96, when Art Bell and I were talking about that, to now, 20 years, that's, you know, almost the entire lifetime of, you know, young people up to age 20 now. You know, they might think, well, it's a long time away. Things take a long time because time passes slower for them. Which is another interesting point in physics, but we'll get to that some other time. The Hopi visit that Holly and I made in 96, and I think in 97, and we made some in the 2000s as well, but back in the time when I was talking with Art, the Hopi did tell us, on top of a mesa there, he said to me, look, you are going to have a multifaceted civil war breakout in North America here in the United States, and it will cause the demise of the United States. There will be such a number of issues and fighting that Russia and China and one Arab nation will invade the United States. I think the Arab guy they were talking about is going to wear the red thing, red cloak or something. I don't know. It's in Hopi legends. But at any rate, they said then that expect this, and it will destroy America. The war will certainly make the most of America land-wise uninhabitable, and there will be survival groups that will join with the Hopi and some of the Navajo and other of the original people of North America to form a new nation in, I think, the Four Corners and up into Colorado. You know, actually, I've traced the path that they would take, and one of the shows we did, I did mention that, and I put a graph up showing when, according to Hopi prophecy, when the water comes up to the shorelines or to where they have to go between the three mesas by boat, that they will leave that area then, because the fighting and stuff in the United States will have stopped, and that's when they will go by land in between all the water that's around them, up to the Four Corners in Colorado and start that that new nation of man. Boy.
Wow.
Anyway.
Such happy thoughts on a Tuesday. You know.
Well, Art and I talked about it, I mean, a long time ago. In fact, if you want to see the path I put in there, go to my Show Images page and go down, about almost to the bottom, three rows from the bottom of the right, you'll see USA and Hopi Mesas, sea level rises. And there are a couple of issues, whether a river is blocked going down into the Hopi Nation and it fills up instead of filling into where the Colorado fills up the Grand Canyon whether it fills up the Mesas area because it gets blocked by an earthquake. And I show the two places where that might happen in 3D. If you've got 3D glasses, you can see it there at the point where the river could be blocked easily by earthquake tumbling rocks of the Grand Canyon down onto the river there. According to my figures, though, unless we had horrific amounts of rain, it would take 20 years for that to fill up by that blocked river and make the blue area that I've got there in that section on the second row left picture. Hopi Mesas flooded in Arizona only. Hopi Mesas flooded in Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. That's the worst-case scenario, and I show red lines of where the migration of the Hopi up into the Four Corners of Colorado, either over into the San Juan on the west side or up into the Front Range area where they might migrate when this happens. But that's how long ago that was. I was talking about that, and that's what Art and I talked about. And speaking of Art, yeah, I guess you heard he's not doing his show now.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I talked to his producer today, and it was because, you know, someone actually shot at him in his car. But they're looking at a way to maybe sneak him back on air somewhere and avoid the whoever's trying to kill him.
We're seeing an increase, and we're going to have people say, "Oh, this is just BS," and you know, here we go again. It's just all made up. But I've seen a marked increase in the number of threats and the number of incidents taking place with I don't want to limit it to talk show hosts, but to people talking about unpopular topics, whether it's Art Bell or others. And it's disconcerting to me. I just wanted to let you know that, you know, I've in the past, well, since it's Tuesday, so in the past 24 hours, actually 48, I've actually spoken to three different individuals in the alternative media who are very concerned over what's going
really?
On.
Really?
Yeah, I have.
I hadn't heard that. What are they, death threats or just some other kind of threat?
Boy, without getting into a lot of detail, one was actually not unlike what Art Bell went through in terms of some shooting going on. And well, that's that one. Another one was harassment that, well, criminal harassment, I would describe. And I don't want to mention these people on air because...
No, don't. I didn't mean for that.
But, you know, it just seems like... it seems like the closer, well, I don't know. I get very tongue-tied when I talk about this, but only because you can't say too much because then it breeds, you know, these idiots that the copycat kind of things, and but it's crazy. I mean,
go for it.
You know, when we were at the Dallas conference, okay, and I think we know where these threats came from. Just real briefly, I mean, we had threats to the speakers there, and you know, I look at this and I'm thinking, why?
Were they delivered by phone or in person or letters or email or what?
By telephone, I mean that I suppose is a story in and of itself. But regardless of that, you know, what is why the intimidation factor right now? Why is it getting to the point where people are trying to intimidate the people telling the truth to shut up? I mean, are we we must be making a difference then? Can we say that? I think we are making a difference.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. What were these people complaining or making the threats there at the Dallas conference? Of what things were they upset about?
Well, there's a big backstory, but the most recent, or the I should say the one particular threat was saying that something was going to happen during a Sunday morning church service. Gave a very specific time and a very specific session number, and. I'm not exactly certain as to the wording, but it was a very specific threat. Now, but it was delivered in such a way, if I'm to understand this correctly, it was delivered in such a way where this person wanted the police to think that he was being helpful. In other words, saying that he wasn't going to threat, or he wasn't doing it, but there was a credible threat against the speakers, kind of putting himself 6 degrees from guilt, shall we say. That's my understanding of it, if that makes sense, you know, from what I know. And I don't think any of that, you know, the potential for disruption there. That's kind of what I'm seeing. And especially those people, too, Stan, who talk about salvation, with the message of salvation. And even, I was talking to somebody who does a lot of protesting or... maybe that's not the right word. Objecting to abortions, you know, going to abort, and the hostility that they're facing is on the rise. People, rather than just yell at them, are, you know, throwing garbage at them. And I know that's always been around, but it seems to be heightening. So the people are getting a little bit more aggressive, I guess, in this whole
thing. Well, they're going to wear the saints out, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to try.
Well, that's right, and I think we have to, you know, we can't quit. We have to keep going, pushing forward. So, it's just you know, I look at this and I just wonder: can Christians get their act together and be one? You know, or I don't know, get their act together, support one another enough to really, you know, to fight against the common enemy, and that's evil.
The spirit that is in each of us is what bonds us together. You know, whether we're physically next door to each other or not, and we have to remember that. We should pray for the body of believers daily.
Yeah.
I forget sometimes, but we should do that.
Yeah.
And look, we know what our task is, and we don't want to fall short of that, so we still keep talking and witnessing. Our mission here at the Deo House is to witness to people about the times and the importance of salvation through Jesus, and that's it. You know, our books that we write, which are few, we do try to put that message there for what the church needs. And you don't need to have church buildings to have fellowship. It's probably hard to find people everywhere in your town to have the same mindset about this, but still, with the internet at the moment, we can fellowship over that, and over the radio and shortwave, things like that. Anyway.
And fellowship is so important. I just want to add that, you know, there's nothing like rubbing elbows with like-minded people, having the same, to be in the same room with you, Stan, it would be well worth the, you know, trip and time to make it when you're at a conference, because the takeaway from just the fellowship alone is so valuable, you know, so I just want to mention that.
Well, thank you for that. I do find it when I go to do lectures after you're off the stage and stuff and or in a restaurant nearby in the hotels or something eating, that people will come up and sit down and, you know, you'll be discussing things that you never thought you would because they have questions on topics or information to share, and it's just a great sharing that people open up to do, you know, when they're not on stage and not worrying about being bugged or whatever. So, yeah, it is important, and I know I see people in little groups all over these conferences, you know, in between lectures and at lunchtimes and after the day is through, gathering together, some of them going home to dinner and fellowship with others there in that town. And this is how the body of believers spreads the information it needs to. Just hang on. It's going to get dark, and it's going to get dark quick, perhaps quicker than we thought, but it's coming. Now, a little bit on space weather.
Yes.
You know, we've been talking in the past about, you know, these coronal mass ejections and flares and stuff. This is solar cycle 24. It's been a rather meager sunspot cycle, but yet the coronal mass ejections and flares were very busy this time, but they're stopping now. And compared to the last solar cycle of 11 and a half years, it started in 2000 and went to about 2009, 10, somewhere in there, it had a double peak. Actually, I think it started about 1998. But anyway, it had a double peak, you know, high sunspot numbers. And this one has a double peak as well. But the highest sunspot count here is not even, you know, it maybe is halfway to the sunspot count we had in the solar cycle 23. Which means that we should be seeing CMEs and flares die off. Having said that, we're still getting today very beautiful aurorae up in the northern hemisphere, auroras, as they say here, which is, I guess, okay. But they're very beautiful because of the ion storm coming from a flare that wasn't aimed directly at us, but it was over on the northeast corner of the sun. I saw it occurred yesterday morning sometime early, and we're getting the thrust of it now. But anyway, the solar cycle is supposedly winding down, and it will wind down now until about 2020. So that's 4 years away, and then it will start to climb back up toward solar cycle 25, which would be peaking in about, you know, 2027, 2028, somewhere near, maybe 2026. Depend. But things are different. The solar cycle is surprisingly low this time, and you know, in spite of the sunspot numbers being low, the flare activity has been what I consider exceptional this time. However, that's it. Let's watch watch that over the next few months and see what happens. The sea surface temperature anomalies at the moment are gradually backing off of the El Nino pattern. The west coast of the United States is still warm at over the, as far as the anomaly, you know, the deviation from the norm. But the drastic situation that I saw, you know, last July and into December is now easing off. So hopefully that will mean our weather returns to some sort of normalcy across the country.
When you say normalcy, are you, just real quick, define normalcy by the standards you're referring to?
Where you have spring occurring at the right time, the right temperature. Little things like that, you know, that affect the food chain.
Yeah.
You know, the floodings in places and times they shouldn't be. The heat waves, you know, with Colorado at the moment, we're almost constantly under a fire watch, even in the wintertime, because of the dryness here on the Front Range. And they're putting out already for the last week or two warnings about, you know, fire and fire hazards. So it would be nice, you know, if we had enough rain in the season it's supposed to be in so that plants and trees and fruit and stuff could grow. California, I'm sure people in California listen to this and say amen to that. Let us have a gentle, constant rain and restore the aquifers. It takes 100 years to restore them, what they've drained out already. So they're going to be very dependent on what falls out of the sky. And if not, there's going to be riots in California.
Yeah.
Anyway. Back over to Israel for a moment. One of the news stories I saw on Channel 7 tonight was about the Temple Institute there in Jerusalem, and they are looking for people who have a certain lifestyle, a certain birth status. I'll read some of those to you and tell you why. To be priests in the new temple that's going to be built. Now, that's how serious they're getting. They did a practice lighting of the menorah, you know, the little seven candlestick thingy, using pure olive oil for the first time in nearly 2,000 years this week. Now, they want young men to be trained to be temple priests. And they have to follow the what's called the halakhic rule for qualification for that. And some of these are really hard. Candidates must be born in Israel to a father of priestly lineage leading back to Aaron from the Torah. And they must have avoided exposure to the biblical impurity rendered by death. In other words, not touching dead bodies and stuff like that. This includes those people who were not born in a hospital and who have not visited hospitals or cemeteries. Okay, how many people have done that? It's like the red heifer that they're trying to raise as well, which cannot have one single white hair in it anywhere, and that's going to be sacrificed as a pure sacrifice to the Lord. But the things that they put on these people, you wonder why anybody would want to do it, you know, who would qualify. But apparently they've got some. I see one guy here who's qualified, and he's wearing the kind of everyday priestly garment, and to find someone that was born in Israel and from the line of Aaron, you know, back in the days of the Torah, you know, after Moses, that would be difficult, you know, because Jewish people, a lot of them didn't live in Israel. So, good luck there, guys. Anyway, that's.
But what's the intent here? I mean,
they want to have these guys so that they can run the temple worship, temple sacrifice again when the Temple of Solomon is rebuilt. They're getting ready for the third temple. If you go over to the Temple Institute in Jerusalem, look up, I don't know what the URL is, but it's the Temple Institute in Jerusalem. You look them up and go to their site and see all of the instruments and parts of things that have to go into the new temple that have been built already. You know, a kosher built, well, you know, halakhic, you know, dinky die to the rules of Judaistic, you know, purity and all that kind of stuff. They have built all of these things, and there are lots of them. Little things that hold, you know, the showbread and things that pour the oil and all this stuff they've got there, and pictures of it showing how ready they are to fill the temple with, you know, kosher stuff when the time comes. So why are they doing this? You know, they are close.
I didn't realize the severity or the degree of readiness that you're referencing here. So what would happen? And I'm just thinking, perhaps what other people might be thinking. What would happen if they said, "All right, we have all the components. We're going to be building right now. Construction is going to start on Monday." What would happen? I mean. Is that even possible?
Well, I suppose it would be, but the problem that makes it a bit dubious at the moment is getting permission of the Muslims that occupy the Temple Mount to let a temple be built up there. Right now, they would not accept that. That's why the idea put forward by some of the people in Turkey to let Israel build Solomon's Temple in the northern part of the Temple Mount in what's the garden area there, next to the Seat of Solomon, which is what it's called. That's why it's so important. You know, if they're pushing that, and they give the go-ahead to do that, as making peace between Israel and the nations and possibly some settlement of land being given over to Palestinians, I'm not sure what will be involved. Excuse me, then they could start right now. But they have to have all this, you know, really technically correct, you know, religiously pure items ready and stored, and the ritual for using these things have to be understood and written down and practiced by who will be temple priests. And at one time, back in 89 when I was there, they had 200 men in priestly school at that time. Now, how many of them stuck to it or not, it's another thing, you know, whether they've gone by the way. But at least one, possibly two of those 200 were made themselves known to a friend of mine there at night that they were Messianic Christian believers, but they were also being trained to be priests in the temple, which was rather interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, it could be done rather rapidly. And if you go to just templeinstitute.org, you'll see this, and then they've got a tour, you know, a 3D visual tour through the new temple, where they've got the architectural drawings of it already and built it up into a 3D model, and you can go through that. So it's really quite an interesting sight. Now, we're getting close to the end here. Just wanted to update you a bit on working on this Atlantis stuff. I know you're interested in that.
Oh, absolutely.
I've been finding stuff that would astound when it's all printed and shown out. I checked three different translations of Greek scholars who translated Plato's work in the Timaeus and Critias debates, where we get the information on Atlantis. And there were all in agreement about the size of Atlantis, the big island, and Atlantis, the little capital island. There are two islands. The big island, which incorporates the little island for the capital and what they call the plain, the 330 miles by 110 miles long, that feed into the ocean that was there, the sea. They all agree that the area of that entire Atlantic, you know, Atlantis island was equal to or greater than the area of Turkey and a little bit of that, which is Asia Minor, to the east of it, and Libya, ancient Libya, North Africa, all put together. So Stanley here, being, you know, bored with nothing to do, pulled up Google Earth and started clicking away little outlines around what was ancient Libya. And Holly says, "What are you doing? I hear this click, 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 click." And I said, I'm making a map. Just hold on. And I put these little dots all the way around what the best area I could find for ancient Libya, which is bigger than Libya we know today. And then I would put the little dots around trying to find, you know, mountains and streams and stuff that separated Asia Minor, Turkey, and, you know, the rest of Asia. And finally got that all into two line outlines of those two regions. And I said, okay, to Google Earth, beautiful tool. I tell you, digital archaeology would be lost without Google Earth. Anyway, I said, okay, what's the area of those two put together? And it was 1.35 million square miles. I said, now that's a big island. If Atlantis is equal to that or greater, 1.35 million, where am I going to find 1.35 million miles in between those and behind the pillars of Hercules? And I messed around, and suddenly it leapt out at me like gangbusters. All of the Saudi Peninsula, all of it, the Persian Gulf, and this side of the mountains that go up into the bottom and just touch the edge of Asia Minor, was ancient Atlantis. I calculated, do the map again, then the little outline. The area of that is 1.3 million square miles. To get that, in the Persian Gulf is where the little island is, or was. And right. in that area, after the great flood that washed sand and soot up to 80 and 100 feet deep in the Persian Gulf area, after that, the things that would be on the island are rather hard to locate. But there was a civilization on an island, Bahrain, it's called now, that juts out. It's not really an island, it's a jut off of the Arabian Peninsula there. Today, I looked at that for the graves that were found there. There were thousands of graves that were round dome mounds, and they're called the graves of the Dilmun civilization, which was a very advanced civilization that traded with people in the Indus River Valley and people up and into Iran and Iraq and that area there. And they've even found seals with inscriptions of the merchants and stuff in the Indus Valley from this Dilmun area. Now, they think that was Dilmun. And years ago, when I was first researching this in the late 80s, I found that the sheikh that controlled Bahrain got excited when the European archaeologists, digging down about 80 feet, started to find, as they went lower and lower, the technology they found was more advanced, as would have been if you had Atlanteans who were half human, half, off-worlders, fallen angels with technology. The sheikh said, "No, we're going to take care of that ourselves, guys. Get out." And no more Europeans were allowed in. So we don't know what happened after that to the digs. But that area, I guarantee you, is the heart of Atlantis. And the whole Saudi Peninsula up to the Mediterranean, not including the Sinai Peninsula, is old Atlantis. And they said the main island, the main island of Atlantis was surrounded by water. Well, you say, well, the Saudi Peninsula is connected to Asia Minor. No, I found when the great split of the continents occurred, talking about that in the Garden of Eden story, that it pushed up the area in northern Lebanon and Syria. It pushed that up and raised it up, but before that was all floodplain going from the Mediterranean straight to the Persian Gulf into the Sea of Arabia. And so all that was all surrounded by water. Three-quarters of it is today, but that side is now pushed up to where the Tigris River and the Euphrates River, they fall down over where the water used to run into the Mediterranean and vice versa. So I've been finding all kinds of things, artifacts that are definitely, of the giants and things like that.
Stan, I must ask, when do you plan on releasing your formal research findings about this? This is amazing.
I'm telling you some of it now, but the formal presentation will be at the July conference in Colorado Springs with the Prophecy Watchers group. I'm not sure what day I'm speaking yet because they haven't sent us our papers, but that's going to be one of the two lectures I'll give there. And, so I'm preparing, slides and information as I go along to put into that. But it's fantastic. And, it explains so much. Adam and Eve had to, look, we're running out of time, but Adam and Eve had, a couple kids and then a bunch more kids we don't know about. And they were marrying, intermarrying sister, brother, and things like that. And when the earth was all together, they could easily walk down into the Saudi Peninsula area in just a little boat ride across. And they were where Plato's report said that the fallen ones, the sons of God, came and married daughters of man. And it's just like in Genesis 6. It's telling you right there. They were right next to each other. That's why they intermarried.
This is fabulous. And as we build up to your presentation at that conference in Colorado Springs, you're just going to have to keep us informed. And, this is fabulous. Between Garden of Eden and now Atlantis, connecting the dots. Stan, you are the real Indiana Jones, let me tell you.
Digital Jones, eh?
There you go. Thank you. What an uplifting way to end the show, because to me, this is exciting.
It is. It's going to explain so many things, so many mysteries.
Indeed. Thank you so much for being our guest tonight, Stan, and every Tuesday night. Thanks for
having us. Thank you, guys. Lord bless you now.
That'll do us. Yeah, that'll. Okay.
Tomorrow, open phone line.
There we go. Help me.
Wednesday. That's a new thing we're doing.
Yeah.
And open lines Wednesday. Chrome Thursday.
Right on.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.